Just to give you a little definition of Sangnya from the Abhidharma, I'll just give you Bhante's commentary and explanation of it from Know Your Mind. The term Sangnya, perception, the term Sangnya, often translated as perception, is often translated as perception, but in fact, it refers to a certain phase within the process of perception, which involves an act of cognition, a sort of mental labelling that arises in dependence upon sense perception of an object. So Sangnya is perception, but perception of a particular kind. It's not perception of something, but perception that something is this or that. One perceives the characteristics of an object and then makes a judgment based on pre-existing conceptions, labels or names as to what those characteristics represent. We could spend the rest of the talk looking at that, but I'm not going to do that. I just want to give you an impression of what Sangnya is. So, you know, say we see colour, particular combination of colours, particular form, and we quickly label flower, because in the past those particular colour, shapes, forms were recognised as a flower, and we'll work it up with all sorts of labels that it's this kind of flower and not that kind of flower and so on. This happens, of course, very quickly. And all sorts of other mental functions can be involved. It can not necessarily sight. The other day I was walking along with somebody and suddenly there was a wonderful smell. And I immediately had an image in my mind of a hyacinth. And I looked around and lo and behold, there was a hyacinth. So that scent, immediately there was a whole, you know, recognition and labelling and categorisation, a going towards, a seizing hold of. This is going on all the time, of course, on all sorts of levels. It's the way we establish ourselves, the way we orientate ourselves, labelling, naming, in the broadest sense. This is a basic human function, and indeed in early Indian thought the basic kind of human analysis was into what they called nama rupa. Rupa meaning form, sense experience, and feelings about that, and then nama simply means name. The whole naming, labelling process. Find nama rupa a distinction in early Indian traditions, and you know, you can see how it's related to sort of some of you know, myths like Adam naming the beasts, naming his world. Well, it's a sort of, really, it's a sort of myth of nama rupa, if you like. So name and form, the Buddha seemed to have taken over, just taken up this basic framework. And he and his followers kind of analysed nama into four different mental processes: feeling, perception, volition, consciousness. So those four plus rupa make up the five skandhas. But originally, I just want to stay with this, it seems it was just name, just the process of naming. That's the basic mental activity, to name, to label. And obviously this can be kind of even before you've actually formed a word in your mind that it's this and that. There's a kind of labelling, an ordering and categorising going on. You know, so we have the experience of form, the senses and sense experience, feelings of pleasure and pain associated with that. Then we name, label, order, categorise. I think we could relate to this activity, relate it to the emergence of self-consciousness, reflexive consciousness, the distinctively human consciousness. We're not completely immersed and lost in sense experience. Our consciousness isn't simple in that sense. It isn't a matter of just being immersed in the senses and just, you know, responding with aversion and attraction and aversion, just instinct. We're able to, as it were, step back from experience, label it, form it, order it, and have a sense of self and other, and of course out of this comes future, past, present. Those kind of notions start to form. They're all in the active, in the, you know, emerging from self-consciousness, reflexive consciousness. I'm here, you're there. We're distinct. We name, we label, we order our experience, we orientate ourselves. This is actually incredibly important and precious and valuable. Human growth and development would be impossible without it. We really would be beasts without it. Without the emergence of self-consciousness, without distinctively human perception, a recognition of self and other, there would be no ethics, there would be no empathy, there would be no culture, there would be no spiritual life. Because we can separate out from experience and order experience, we can do imaginative identification, for example. Because we've separated out, we can then actually empathise with others, strangely enough. You know, because I know I'm different from you, I can reflect, you're different from me, so I treat you according to you, rather than according to just my desires and so on. So we have to be careful when we read things in Buddhist texts like no perception of, or no self, no perception of a self. We have to be careful that we don't interpret it in terms of sort of sinking into a bovine, brutish, dull, stupefied state. Buddhist life isn't about getting stoned, dulled, you know, in any particular way, you know, and sort of sinking to a sort of, you know, below self-consciousness, if you like. That's not what's meant at all. You have to have a self, you have to have perception and recognition before you can go beyond them.